accession number 33206, real 8.
Commander Greet, real 8. Were there any other duties that you undertook while on board these minesweepers? Either in the Mediterranean or at home?
Duties, my personal duties, you mean, or the ship?
If you go
my personal duties. Well, I mean, I was first lieutenant of the ship, so I had to run it. Captains never do. Second in command runs it. So I was fairly busy doing that. And I knew the ship's company very well. We were a good team. And and I was the mine sweeping expert, so I would spend time on board the other ships, training them and making sure they knew what they were doing. I went on a couple of cruises because we all knew each other very well. We were in the same squadron, etc. And captain of one of the others would say, or lieutenants, he'd say, we're going to Holland, if you want to come. I said, all right, so I'd go with them. You know. So I did a fair amount of time in other ships, training them, and also I went on a couple of trips going with them to make sure they knew what they were doing. And I was pretty busy. And I was in charge of minesweeping. I mean, you have to have somebody on the minesweeping deck because it's pretty dangerous to start with. There's wires and cables and things everywhere. Who knows what he's doing, to take charge and direct what was going on. Otherwise, people get caught up in wires and all sorts of things. So I was always on the minesweeping deck when we did any minesweeping, which was frequent because we used to exercise a lot. So that kept me busy. All sorts of things kept me busy. Things in ships do keep you busy. Keeping the ship clean, keeping the ship painted, all sorts of things. Dealing with defaulters and that sort of thing. People wheeled up in front of you, you'd disobeyed orders or something. You'd do all that.
Did you get much problems with discipline?
No, not really. I mean, you certainly had problems, but not many, not very serious. We could always change things, you know. It was very rare that anything serious happened, but because you knew the personalities very well, you could change things a little bit, you know, knowing the circumstances, like, for example, disobedience of orders. You knew the two people concerned, and you knew the reason for that. You could change it to slackness and obeying or something, you know, which was less. Now, not in every case, but in a lot of cases. But we didn't have anything terribly serious. They all knew each other too well. And we ate well. We had two officer stewards. We looked after us. We were only five officers in the ship. So we were looked after pretty well. It was good. I enjoyed mine. We were nice on.
And so, apart from the Cyprus patrols and exercising, did these minesweepers have any other roles to fulfil?
Not really, no. Cyprus patrols, exercising. No, that's about what we did, yeah.
Okay, so after you left your last minesweeper, what happened next?
And I left my last minesweeper. I was promoted to lieutenant commander, actually before I left. That's the reason I left, because the first lieutenant was a lieutenant normally. And we had a depot ship with a captain in command, who was in command of all the minesweepers. He was in his own ship. But he gave, the day I was promoted, he gave a cocktail party, not for me, but I mean, I was of course invited and we were alongside. And I was still wearing lieutenant's stripes, and he refused to let me on board. He said, "You're not coming until you're correctly dressed." So I said, "Very good, sir." So after he'd left the gangway and gone to see his guests, I went on board and enjoyed the party. But he was, well, we were quite good friends, but he was a bit upmarket, you know. Yes, you get these people. Anyway, there we go. I then went back to HMS Vernon, which was the minesweeping school. That's why I went there. And then I went to the underwater detection establishment at Portland. It's a scientific establishment where they design new material, minesweeping, and they had a naval officer to tell the scientists if it was any good. If it's as big as a house, we don't want it. You know, that's why I was there, to the naval side of the material they were producing and giving it a naval bias, you know, because scientists live in their own world, and they would produce things that, you know, we didn't want, or at least they would start to produce things and we could stop them. Yeah. So I did June 59 to April 60. I wasn't there quite a year. We lived in Portland, and my first son was born, our first son was born there in Portland. And while in Portland, I was appointed as first lieutenant of a frigate, St. Bride's Bay, which was in the Far East, and it was an 18-month commission. There were frigates in the Far East, there was a squadron, that had never been out of the Far East, stayed there, and were manned by air. And my first son was 10 months old, and I went away for 18 months as number one of the St. Bride's Bay. And I served in her for 18 months in Singapore, Hong Kong, all points east, Japan, while Madeleine went back to, she was teaching in the French Lycée in London, in South Kent. And she went back to teaching in that time, and I stayed there. Came back in December 61, promoted to commander. I was then appointed to the London Region Careers Staff Officer Recruiting. And I had an office in central London. My memory for names, I'm afraid, is... quite a big office and a very nice one. And I was responsible for all recruiting in the London area. I used to travel around, you know, to regions and check. And it was my first job as a commander. And from there, I was appointed to the staff of the commander in the American commander-in-chief in Norfolk, Virginia. And we went as a family. I then had a second son. We went to Norfolk, Virginia for 2.5 years.
What was your role there?
I was a planner on NATO staff for the American commander, who was top of the American Navy. I had two of them. I didn't like the first one. I liked the second one very much. He was a Texan, and he treated me as his son, virtually, and I loved it. We had a lovely time. And Madeleine didn't enjoy it all that much. She liked America, but with two young children. I mean, the second son was only 3 weeks old when we went to America. So she, you know, wasn't free very much. And I spent a lot of time flying to other places, Portugal, Norway, London, in my job as a planner. And... I enjoyed it. I was only there for 2 years, and we had an English admiral who was second, number two. And I met him when my 2 years was nearly up, and I said, I was coming to see you to see if I'd get an extension. He said no. he said, why do you want extension? And I said, well, I got one child in school and, you know, in America. And well, various other reasons I produced. And no, he said. Anyway, next time I met him, he said, all right, I fixed it. So I was the only one ever to stay for 2.5 years in America. Everybody else was 2 years. And I came back and went to, for my sins, into the Ministry of Defence, in the Operations Division, where I stayed until I retired from the active Navy.
And what were you doing?
Then I went back in the Ministry of Defence as a commander, as a retired officer. There were certain posts in the Ministry of Defence, you know, for people like me with experience and rank as a retired officer to run certain aspects of it, which I did. And I did that for 13 years. And I finally retired in 1985.
Thank you, Dick. And when you came to leave the Navy, was there a particular demobilisation process you had to go through?
I did a week's course to, along with a lot of other, well, not a lot, about 5 or 6 others who were leaving the Navy, to look into civilian employment. And we went to the Hoover factory and Ford Motor Factory and Daily Mirror, and we had lectures from various people to tell us all about what we could do and what we couldn't do. So that was their way of gearing us for civil life. But I went back anyway, so it didn't matter. I enjoyed my 13 years very much. I went to sea often because my job was looking after all the foreign naval attaches in London, and there were 110 of them. And one of my jobs was to show them the Royal Navy. So I used to take them to sea, aircraft carriers, fly by helicopters and things, special, you know, selected, because they were all different security levels, you can imagine. But I knew them all, the Russians, the lot. Knew their wives, knew their families. Socially, we were very involved. Three receptions a night. And the last one, perhaps, we didn't go to. Although we did mostly, because I was fairly conscientious. And one, they would ring me up in the morning and say, you went to the Russian, you went to the American, you didn't come to us. And I'd have to apologise and say, my car broke down or something. It was a lovely job. And part of it was arranging visits for the First Sea Lord of the heads of other navies. He could invite, I think it was twice a year, and I had to do all the programme for them. So I knew, I served under 3 or 4 First Sea Lords, heads of Navy, knew them all very well. They knew me by my Christian name, because I did all their visits and things, knew their wives. So it was a very exceptional job, and I loved it. I would have stayed forever, but so I had to leave at the age of 65.
I see, so that was your last, job when you'd been retired?
That was my last job. 13 years in the ministry, absolutely involved with naval attaches. I was their entry into the ministry. They had to come to me for everything they wanted, which they wanted quite a lot, most of them, and I had to decide whether they could be given it or shown it, and then sort out somebody, some admiral or other, to see them, to see. And I got to know them very well, and they knew me very well, and they knew that if I said no, they knew it was security reasons, not me personally. I mean, I sat now, we serve a monthly lunch, the Naval I belong to the Naval Attaches Association, as an honorary member, and we used to go for lunch. I mean, they're all captains and admirals. And I sat next to the Russian captain, and it was very hot. We were on the embankment down below. Maybe you shouldn't put this in about Russians. No, maybe not. Because if a Russian listens to it, he might feel offended. No, I won't put that in. But I mean, I sat next to him and I knew them all very well. We were invited by them, you know, to receptions and things. And we had to entertain a lot ourselves. You know, we lived at that stage in a big house over the other side of the line. And we had a big dining room and we could give parties, which we had to, yeah. And we had a lovely lady who was our cleaning lady for 21 years and a member of the family, and she used to come and cook. So, we had to do a certain amount, but she did that. So we could entertain. It was very nice. It was a good life.
And since leaving the Navy, have you kept in contact with your old comrades through association?
Well, all the attaches changed, of course, because they do 2 years in London, or some did three. And after that, they are changed by somebody else. So after I left, I mean, those I knew would go back to their countries and I wouldn't know the new ones. But I've kept in touch with people who worked with me, because I was the head of Foreign Liaison Section Navy. There was a Foreign Liaison Section Army and Air Force. And I've kept in touch with some of those. But I still have naval friends, but getting less and less, you know. We're all the same age, we're all drifting off, yeah. And but I still have contact with the Navy, and I still get naval magazines and things sent me, and you know, so I know what's going on with the Navy, but I don't really take much part. My last captain of St. Bride's Bay, when he was there, became an admiral, and he and I have lunch sometimes in his club in London, and he always invites a couple of others from the ship, you know. It's nice, and I enjoy it.
Just one last question to finish up. What do you think makes a happy ship?
A happy ship is made by the officers, and particularly the first lieutenant, who really has everything to do in the ship. The attitude of officers towards the sailors, knowing about their problems, their wives, their mothers, being very fair, they know you're fair, and generally looking after them, sorting out problems that they might have, and generally engendering a ship spirit. You know, because sailors are very proud of their ships, and they'll fight ashore. Somebody slanders the ship. I think it's basically, well, and of course, it has to do with the ship as well. Accommodation, feeding, that's important. Good feeding arrangements, you know, good cooks, that sort of thing. Their comfort in general. So I think basically, from the point of view of discipline and treating, it's the officers, as I say, particularly the first lieutenant, who make sure that the other officers do their job. And taking an interest in them, knowing about them, and they feel you're fair and they can come and talk. And the comfort of the ship. And of course, first, and I mean, they could have, for example, harsh petty officers in charge, petty officer. So it's the first lieutenant who knows what's going on. He's got his ear to the ground. Who can put things right? You know, warn, tell the petty officer how to conduct himself, and you know, that sort of thing. So I don't know whether that answers your question, does it? Yeah. It's a general thing about the ship. I mean, St. Bride's Bay, I was first attendant of, we were a very happy ship. And remember that all those frigates in the squadron, they had to do 18 months. And we were the only ship who did their 18 months without sailors going to jail and what have you, because sailor away from home for 18 months could be a bit difficult. And indeed they were in other ships. But we never, ever had any problems. And I think that was because they were a happy ship. And for example, I as first lieutenant was in charge of the victualling fund. And I used to have a meeting with the chief cook and the chief supplier, chief petrol supply officer. And we would sort out menus, because you had an amount per head to use to feed the sailors. So you could feed them well if you did it right, and also save money. And the money you saved went into a ship's fund. We, on one occasion, in not Hong Kong, anyway, we were able to take the whole ship's company ashore for dinner with the ship's fund that we had saved from the victualling money, but they had also fared very well because we had organised it with the chief cook and the chief supplier. Most first lieutenants didn't do it because they had no interest in victualling whatsoever. And I was only interested initially in victualling because I did a course in victualling and cooking, but somebody complained. It was tradition. There's a lot of tradition in the Navy. First lieutenants were responsible for victualling and the meals and cooking. And nobody ever was. Left it to the chief, you know, to any problem, come and see me. Otherwise, don't bother. And somebody complained that it was stupid for first lieutenants to be responsible if they didn't know anything about victualling and they weren't going to interest themselves anyway. So it was decreed that anybody appointed as first lieutenant of a frigate would do a two-weeks course in Chatham in the cookery school, where we went into costs and all sorts of things. You know, I really became interested. And we had to do a bit of cooking, but of course we had somebody to peel the potatoes and somebody else. So we didn't actually do much cooking. But we did become conscious. I did. A lot didn't. They didn't like the idea. We were about six, I think. One resigned. He said he wasn't going to join the Navy to worry about victualling. He was there as a seaman officer and he was driving a ship. And but I was interested. And I learnt a lot about victualling and, you know, costs and what have you. And when I joined the ship, I went to the galley and I said to the chief cook, "What do you want today, chief?" And he said, "Soup, sir." I said, "I suppose you've got the, how do you call it, thing with, you make up with herbs, you put in the soup." Oh, Christ. Have you got the... Anyway, I knew about it because of the school. And he said, "The what?" I said, "The... whatever it was." He said, "What's that?" So I said, "Now, wait a minute, chief, I got to teach you a few things." And from then on, we became very good friends. And he really, you know, worried about his cooking. And he did extremely well. And by having a weekly meeting with the two chiefs, who knew I was interested, and, you know, we can do things together, it paid dividends. They ate well, and we had no problems in the ship, ever. If we had, we would have dealt them, but we didn't have any. And we were good at football, we were good at cricket, and they loved the ship, you know. If you're going to tell me my ship's out is dirty, I'll thump you. And that's the way it was. Anyway.
Thank you very much.
Is that it? Okay.